This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And boy, it's hopping lately. Yeah, there's a lot of automotive information to talk about. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is Chris Teague. Chris, thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, as always, for having me. Jack, how are you?
I am good. I'm worried that you're going to be struck by lightning or something like that. You're not standing out in the middle of the golf course recording this, but you are, in the midst of between thunderstorms. Is that what's going on in Maine right now?
That's exactly what's happening. So I will limp through with hotspot power. We'll see how it goes. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I think we'll be fine. I'm on the West Coast where things are a lot calmer. If we have a thunderstorm in the next 3 months, I'd be shocked. In fact, if we have a thunderstorm in the year 2020, I'd pretty much be shocked. So things are a little bit different on the West Coast, although we're still a bit in the throes of lockdown or some semblance of lockdown. A lot of restaurants are now closed down for indoor dining, for example, and things like that. Although there's a lot of outdoor dining going on here. It's very festive in that way. But back to cars. In our road test segment, we'll be looking at the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. I was driving that at some length over the course of the last week. And Chris, what were you driving?
I was driving the Genesis G70, the 3.3 twin-turbo version.
Wow. Styling and with some performance and sport attached to it as well. Pretty cool. Our special guest today is Dave Sargent. David Sargent is Vice President of the Quality Practice at J.D. Power. He's going to be talking about the initial quality study that J.D. Power does every year. Major changes in it this year. And we talked with him about it at length. So we will have that in-depth interview for you later in the show. Let's charge ahead, though, and talk about what's going on and what we can talk about out of the news. There's some news that we really can't talk about, but let's talk about what we can. What do you have going for us, Chris?
Well, it's like you said, the world just kind of woke up and decided to start talking about cars all of a sudden in the past week or so. I think the most exciting thing for me that's come out of the last couple of days are a few more leaks on the upcoming Ford Bronco. I think that the actual reveal is scheduled for July 13th, not July 9th, as originally, I think it was July 9th that was originally planned. But they're going to live stream the event, which is a big deal, and it'll be available on a few different streaming services after the fact. So they're really going all out on the unveiling of this thing.
It's going to be a big one, that's for sure. I was on what was something like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hour call today, a webinar kind of situation. Maybe you were as well, Chris, where a lot of information that we can't talk about yet was revealed. We will be able to reveal it after Monday, late in the day on Monday of this coming week. Suffice it to say, Bronco will be a Ford brand. And not just a vehicle, and a lot of interesting things to tell you about it when we can.
Yes, and if anyone is really curious, the internet is full of leaked pictures, images, and so on. So hands off there.
Yeah, and we had nothing to do with those, and we don't authorize you looking at them officially. If you happen to see them, there's nothing we can do about that. But
exactly.
we are in no way connected with that, and we abide by what the manufacturers suggest us. When they invite us to cover a vehicle, we feel that we should abide by their wishes as to when we release information. Not how we talk about it. We can talk about it the way we want. But when is something we typically abide by.
That is true.
So anything else cooking beyond that? I mean, there's, I think, some more off-road information from Chevrolet, and in some ways almost directly competitive with the Bronco launch.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, well, Trailblazer. It seems so long ago, and yet it is yet to be officially launched. There's an embargo on that information. I will be talking with a lengthy interview. It might seem lengthy to him in particular, with one of the product experts on that vehicle tomorrow. So we will have that in an upcoming show. And so it's heating up. I mean, and it's really interesting that it's heating up in the off-road space, which is one of the fastest growing segments of the market and has been for quite some time. And I'm I'm not sure that so many of these vehicles are being used for off-roading, but certainly the profiling, as if you could do that, is worth it to some people.
I agree. There was some speculation when the pandemic started heating up that people were buying more Jeeps because they felt like they needed to escape somehow. But these new vehicles from Ford and Chevy, they're going to hit head-to-head with Jeep on a few different levels, and it'll be exciting to see what that does to Jeep's kind of stronghold, because they've been kind of the only game in town for a while now. So at least in the, you know, kind of mainstream market. So it'll be really fun to see what happens there.
Right. And Jeep, of course, is a very important brand to Fiat Chrysler, their sole growth, really. You know, Ram, of course, is strong. Their Ram trucks are strong. And Jeep, and then everything else, not so much. I mean, they're certainly holding their own, but they're not going crazy. But Jeep has been a very strong bright spot for them, and now they're going to be dealing with some competition. So we'll see what the staying power of that competition is, because certainly the Jeep brand has been hanging in there forever and ever and ever with various ownerships through the years.
Right.
Are there any other things in the news that are sparking your interest? Any thoughts of what we might see in terms of auto shows coming up, or other intros that we might see?
Well, I've been seeing quite a few more events that have been canceled. I see a few. I think SEMA is still scheduled in Las Vegas later this year, and a couple of others. But I think it's still touch and go as to whether those will actually, you know, go off without a hitch or go off at all. So I think it'll be it's too early to say on some of those things. We've seen, you know, the New York auto shows canceled. Geneva was canceled, and they even had to sell the show to fund some of the debt they incurred in that cancellation process. I think they canceled it for 2021 as well. So people are being really cautious, understandably so. You know, getting a lot of attendees or people in one space for any reason is a bad, kind of a bad look right now, and dangerous for a bunch of different reasons. So I think we'll see more and more continue to cancel, and probably start seeing some news about next year, more than just Geneva, as we get closer to those dates as well.
You know, I'm not sure I agree on all of that, Chris, because I know for a fact that the Los Angeles Auto Show, which is scheduled for mid-November, is still gung-ho about going forward. You know, getting blessed by the L.A. County Health Department and having a pretty traditional show. And one of the reasons I'm hooked into that a little bit is North American Car of the Year will be announcing its semi-finalists for the North American Car of the Year at that show. And as of now, as of this week, it is still definitely on. And we will see. I've also been getting some inquiries from some manufacturers about, you know, individuals' desires to ability to travel through the balance of the year. I think some manufacturers are now testing the waters a little bit to see if journalists are willing to travel, how many of them are willing to travel. We recently took a poll of the folks at the Motor Press Guild, where I'm a board member, and you know, a significant majority of those folks were quite willing to do an event in October. So that of course, changes depending on what you see on the news almost minute by minute, but we'll just have to see about that.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know LA was so gung ho. So it'll be, like you said, it'll be interesting to see. I do hope that it gets to go to be pulled off. You know, I'm more, obviously, the more these things that continue to go on, the better our jobs and our lives are professionally. So I think that's a good sign.
Right. Well, when we come back, we will be road testing two interesting vehicles: the Genesis G70. Wow, hot car, a lot of fun. And I was testing the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. A lot of fun in a completely different way, but we will talk about both of those when we come back. With Chris Teague, I'm Jack Nerad, and thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it is road test time here on America on the Road, one of our favorite segments of the program, because we live to drive. Absolutely, we live to drive, and we kind of drive to live as well. Chris, you were driving the Genesis G70, kind of a sports sedan. Tell us about it.
It was a thoroughly enjoyable week. I'll start by saying that. But I was testing the twin turbocharged 3.3-liter version. It's got the V6. It has 365 horsepower, 376 pound-feet of torque. Through that, I believe, is an 8-speed automatic transmission. There is a 2.0 liter four-cylinder version that you can get with a manual gearbox. That's not what we're talking about here, though. This is the hotter, faster, more expensive version of the car, which is frankly the one to buy if you're going to buy one anyway, I believe, unless you're really hooked on a manual. But it makes great sounds, even for a V6 engine. The interior had quilted leather, quilted door panels, very luxurious, high-end feeling interior, build quality. Everything felt solid. The door shut with a nice thud. The inside is quiet. And the materials is what you'd expect from a almost $50,000 sports sedan. So nice aluminum accents, like I mentioned, leather earlier. Everything is laid out in a very ergonomic fashion, if I'm going to break out my dictionary for big words here. Some people have complained about the size of the back seat. However, I found that a large full-size car seat and a regular booster style seat fit behind us without a problem. We took it on quite a long road trip for what is able to be done during the pandemic, but we're able to fit all of our beach gear in the back as well. Let's see, the infotainment system is very simple to use. It's a little bit plain. It's very close to what you'd see in a Hyundai if you've ever used one of those. The menus are laid out easily and you're able to navigate them while the car is in motion without much problem at all. And the driving experience itself. So 0 to 60 in under 5 seconds. I think it's clocked at somewhere around 4.7 seconds through the V6 engine, like I mentioned. It's got selectable drive modes. So I spent most of my time driving around in sport mode, which stiffens the suspension up, tightens up steering, and makes gear shifts crack off a little bit more quickly for a sportier feel, as evidenced by the name. But there are other modes, Eco, if you do please to drive that way, which most people probably won't in the car. But just a really neat car all around, some great tech, and it's also a top safety pick plus from the IIHS, which I thought was just kind of a cherry on top of a car that's already packed with things to like.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wonder how many people and how often they push the Eco button. That's not a button I push all that often, and I'm not the typical driver. I freely admit that, and you know, I like performance maybe more than most, but I'm thinking most people who are buying a G70 are not going to push that button very often. I guess it's nice that it's there. It doesn't cost anything more. But I just wonder about it in cars like that.
It's definitely a question. I think that the sport mode in the G70, similar to other kind of Kia Hyundai family cars that I've driven. So like the K900 does this, the Kia K900 does this as well. When you put the car in sport mode, the seat bolsters tighten automatically. And I actually found that to be a more comfortable setting for the seat, even though they're very comfortable to begin with. So I think that there are, for a few reasons, in that car is a lot more fun with sport mode turned on.
Right. And I think you touched on it. The infotainment system is really easy to operate in Genesis vehicles. I think Genesis and Hyundai have really cracked that code in a way that others haven't. And I think a lot of luxury models in particular, for one reason or another, decide to really complicate the interface and the infotainment system. So navigation, even things like running the heater and air conditioning, go through the infotainment system sometimes, and it just becomes very, very painful to try and get all that stuff to work. I think this is the right mix. What do you think? Yeah, you mentioned you thought it was a little bit plain, Jane, but do you think it's right, or do you think that they should be slightly more complicated?
No, I think they did a good job with it. I think we've talked in the past about Fiat Chrysler's Uconnect system, and I've written several times about Ford Sync 3. Those are both colorful, nice to look at systems with a bunch of features, but they're both easy to use, although Sync 3 is guilty of having some features buried deep in some menu touches, which can make it hard to use while driving. But I think Hyundai and Kia too really have nailed it with their home screen layout. When you start the car up, there is a screen with radio stations. There's a navigation that's kind of like tiles or windows on the screen that make it easy to figure out what you want to get and touch. They've left in a tuning and a volume knob, which are great for the people who love to beat up on Honda and others for removing the tuning knob. So I think they've done a good job, and they've kept just enough of the physical buttons in place to make it familiar for somebody who may not really want to interact with the car completely through touch. So I think that's a good step for them.
Yeah. Well, I think we're both in agreement that the G70 is a very good value, a lot of performance, at the same time, great comfort, and as you mentioned, it accommodates child seats in the rear. So all around, I think we've got a winner there.
Agreed.
And I was driving, I'll tip it off right from the beginning. The Toyota RAV4 Hybrid is another winner in my book. What Toyota has done recently, and it's maybe a little under the radar, they have essentially made their hybrid models of things like the RAV4 and the Camry and the Corolla the premium model, the best model, at least in my mind, the best model in each of those product lines. And I certainly think that's the case with the Toyota RAV4. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the conventional Toyota RAV4. A lot to like about it. But when you add that little bit more of torque that you get from this hybrid system, the way they're doing it in Toyotas these days, it's just that much better. The drivability all around is terrific. Ride quality, very good. I think ride quality is no different, really, than the conventional RAV4. But in terms of just all around goodness, there's a lot to like about this compact SUV, five passenger, plenty of room in the rear. If you want to go off-roading, it'll do it, at least to an extent. And probably the extent you want to. And if you want to go seriously off-roading, there is a RAV4 version for you. It's not the hybrid, but they have some models that are much more off-road oriented. We talked about that in the previous segment, how that is a growing part of the market, and certainly Toyota wants to play in that sandbox. I just like the RAV4 all around. It doesn't handle like a sports car. It handles like a well-built and seems extremely sturdy compact SUV. It competes with, say, the Honda CR-V, Nissan Rogue, those vehicles. And to me, it's the premium version of those in the marketplace. To show you how much, I guess, the DRAD family appreciates that. My middle daughter owns a previous generation of the RAV4. Which we bought used, and it's been terrific for her. Knockwood, I'm knocking on the desk here in the studio as I say that. It just all around. I mean, of course, excellent fuel economy. It's perhaps not as important at this time, and you wonder about the fuel economy trade-off with the additional premium that you pay for the hybrid. But I would pay for the hybrid, I think, because, number one, they're all-wheel drive, and the drivability that I've talked about, where you have that added torque just when you need it, when you're accelerating from a stop sign, or you hit the gas and you want to pass. You hit the gas and you get electric, actually. You get electric power, and off you go, and it just feels better. I would say on the downside, the infotainment systems in Toyotas are still not what they could be, as far as I'm concerned. And it starts really almost with the way the screen is positioned in the vehicle. It seems positioned to pick up a lot of glare. They actually have come around to offering Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and they were really late to the party on that. But that part of the equation has been solved, but there's still some other things about the infotainment system that I'm not thrilled with, but I would certainly live with that for the reliability, the quality, and just the drivability of the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. I think it's a really good vehicle.
I agree. I think Toyota and Lexus, by extension, were very cautious with users' data security, at least was told to me by one of their engineers a while back. So they struggled with the kind of balance between smartphone integration and privacy for the drivers, for the owners. And I think that was one of the reasons why they kind of dragged their feet a little bit. But now they're coming around. The base system is a little clunky, but thankfully there is Apple CarPlay and Android Auto to kind of overlay that. So you don't spend a lot of time actually looking at it, although the glare on the screen is not fixed by that at all. But as you said, it's a great vehicle to drive. It's actually quicker than the other RAV4s. It's got a ton of interior space. We loved it. Had enough room to carry all four of us and the dog and some gear as well. And Toyota Safety Sense is a real winner. It's got standard safety features like lane keep assist and things like that that really bump that value up a little bit, even though the hybrid's more expensive than the normal RAV4. So I think it's a good vehicle all around, as you say.
Yeah. And hybrid is something that Toyota's doing and pretty much nobody else is these days, except, I suppose, the mild hybrids you're seeing by like Mercedes-Benz and BMW, which is in a lot of ways a whole different thing. Toyota's really doubling down on this hybrid stuff, and nobody is following suit. So you wonder if they're off on their own island or if this is going to be a competitive advantage for them. And I think we'll just have to see how that pans out.
Totally agree. And next year we'll see the RAV, well, actually very soon we'll see the RAV4 Prime. So
right. Plug-in
hybrid version.
Right. And when we come back, we will be taking your listener questions and answering them in our listener question portion of the show. That's how we do it here on America on the Road. So stay with us. And with Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad. Stay with us and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad back with you, and it is question and answer time on America on the Road. We're taking your automotive questions, and we're answering them right here on America on the Road for all to see, or at least hear. And we'd love to hear from you. You can send your question to us, editor@drivingtoday.com. editor@drivingtoday.com is the way to get a question to us, and we will answer your question on an upcoming show. And thank you very much for providing us with a question. What's our first question of this week, Chris?
We had a question about the J.D. Power initial quality survey. So to simplify it just a little bit, I wonder if you could tell us what kind of goes into making something the best or making something the worst and kind of how those differ this year going against years past.
Right. Without stepping on our interview with Dave Sargent, which is coming up, Dave Sargent of J.D. Power, who is their vice president of quality, their quality practice, and we'll describe that in great detail, I'll give you the short answer. And IQS, or the initial quality study, gets a lot of popularity because it has the word quality in it, and everybody wants a quality car. It looks at quality after a short period of time, just 90 days of ownership. And it treats things that go wrong. It looks at things that go wrong, basically. So a vehicle that is not is trouble-free, let's say, is easy to use, and thus has easy-to-use infotainment, doesn't have mechanical problems, doesn't give you problems of any sort, that's going to score very highly on the initial quality study. Those vehicles that they might be operating exactly as designed, but they're kind of complicated and you really don't understand them, those are likely to cause problems and thus, you know, be graded lower. And I think Dave will tell you, Dave Sargent will say in our upcoming interview with him that IQS is important, the initial quality study is important, but it should be taken as part of an array of studies that J.D. Power does to help people understand and to help the industry in particular understand which vehicles are high quality and what quality really is. And it's more than just things that don't go wrong. Does that help?
It absolutely does.
Cool. Well, there's another question here, and it has to do with incentives and whether this is a great time to buy a car. Typically, the summertime, you're getting to the end of the model year, and depending upon your point of view, it's a great time to buy a car, could be. You're seeing closeouts. Certainly, the dealers want to get the current model year vehicles off the lot and the new ones on. But we've got very different circumstances this time around, don't we, Chris, in terms of, you know, cars being manufactured and, you know, a big lull in manufacturing during the spring. What's your thoughts about what this is going to look like as a time to buy?
Well, I think the buying situation, like you said, is very different than it was a couple of months ago. Dealers are starting to see the pinch or feel the pinch a little bit from that shutdown. Inventory levels aren't quite what they should be to see clearance prices or, you know, model year-end clearance prices like you spoke about. I do think if you are willing to flex a little bit on your selection, so if you don't have a specific model that you absolutely have to have, there are still some great deals to be had. You just may have to settle for something that's not perfect or not exactly what you want. Some of those really long 72, 80, you know, whatever, 84-month loans that we saw with 0% financing those have dried up a little bit. There are still a few. I know Jeep has some going on, or FCA in general. The Pacifica hybrid minivan has a deal like that as well. But again, they're not going to be widespread, full on model line discounts and long terms with 0% interest like we saw back in April and early May.
Yeah, certainly as the months changed, as we changed from June to July, a lot, especially the deferred payment plans, there were a lot of them out there where you could put off payments for 90 days, sometimes 6 months. And that's pretty much gone by the board. There are still quite a few 0% loans out there for as much as 72 months. I didn't see any 84 months for any of those loans as I did my research recently. I put together a fairly lengthy article on that. So it's, I would say the incentives aren't as strong as they were a month ago. This is still a pretty darn good time to buy a car, and I would get to it earlier in July and not wait till August, because I think the selection, as you say, Chris, is going to be much poorer as we get toward the end of this model year.
Yes, and there, like you said, there are still some deals to be had. Some companies have kind of changed their approach. They're still coming out with some really innovative things. I saw on TV the other day and just read about it earlier this morning, the Ford Promise program. If you buy a vehicle through Ford Credit, an eligible vehicle, not sure what that means exactly, but if you lose your job within the year after you purchase the vehicle, they'll take it back, so you can, you know, not pay the payments.
A lot of creative stuff out there for the car buyer, and a good time to buy a car, certainly. So when we come back, we will be talking with David Sargent. He is the vice president of the quality practice at J.D. Power. He's been at J.D. Power for a long period of time. I've known him for years and years and years. A really quality guy who, in both senses of the term, I guess, who really understands the business very, very well. It's fascinating to talk to him, so I think you'll enjoy that interview. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad, and this is America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you, and we have a special guest, and very special to me because I have known Dave Sargent for many, many years, more years than we would like to remember, probably. But Dave Sargent is with J.D. Power. He's the vice president there, and give me your correct title, Dave. I'm not certain of it.
It's vice president of automotive quality.
Aha. And that's what we're going to be talking about, and it's a fascinating subject, and really it's kind of been your life's work, hasn't it, Dave?
It has. I've been, like you indicated, I've been at J.D. Power a long time. I joined in 1992. First day I joined, I was working on the initial quality study, and 28 years later, yeah. I'm still working on it in
Here you
a
are.
Different
yeah.
capacity.
Well, you probably know it pretty well by now.
I'm starting to get the hang of it, yeah.
Tell people what J.D. Power is all about. So many people have heard the name, and you've been there a long time. Tell them what it's all about.
Sure. So J.D. Power essentially is a data and analytics company. We help automate, we work in many industries, but in the automotive industry, we help automakers design and build better vehicles and sell them more efficiently and provide better customer service. And a lot of this comes from, we survey consumers independently. So we, when somebody buys a new vehicle, we'll send them a survey and ask them to complete it and tell us about their experience. And for this study, specifically about any problems that they have experienced with their vehicle. And this year we got over 87,000 responses from consumers, and we tabulate those results. We provide the automakers with extremely detailed results. So they'll get it down to the door handle so they can see how they are performing relative to their competitors. See where they're doing well, where they're falling behind, who's doing it best. Through that benchmarking, they can improve their own quality. And then we put out the top line results to consumers to help them in their vehicle buying decisions. You know, it's one of the things that they can take into account when they're looking to buy a vehicle is what's the likely quality of that vehicle. But I think what's important for folks to understand is this is not our opinion on the vehicles. We're not driving and testing the vehicles like an auto magazine would do. This is purely based on actual owners of the vehicles and their experiences with them.
Yeah, and initial quality and the initial quality study has got a lot of traction over the years. I think maybe because the word quality is in the title, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a bit about your array of studies. IQS, initial quality, is one of them. Talk about that a little bit. Give us a little perspective.
So, yeah, so the initial quality study is our most well-known study. It's the one that garners the most attention. And as you say, it's about the quality of the latest model year vehicles, which people are extremely interested in, both the, you know, the automakers, their suppliers, as well as consumers. Everybody wants to know, you know, the likely quality of a vehicle that someone's going to buy. And this is something that for consumers, it's hard to detect by yourself. You can't test drive a vehicle and really understand what the likely quality is going to be. You actually have to own the vehicle to do that. And so I think that helps consumers a lot. Yeah, we have other studies. Our next study will come out in a month, which is our appeal study, which really is all about the customer's love affair with their vehicle and, yeah, which vehicles deliver on that and which vehicles fall short. So that looks at styling and performance and comfort and all of the good side of the technology in the vehicles. And it is, you know, all about why people rave about some vehicles and not about others. We have, following that, technology experience index study, which will look very specifically at all of the leading edge technologies that are coming to the market and which automakers are introducing them and how consumers are reacting to those very advanced technologies, whether that's, you know, automated driving or transparent trailer or remote parking or all of these fun and exciting new technologies. We're going to look at, you know, which vehicles have them, which ones do well, which ones do not so well. We have a longer term dependability study, which is a bit like the initial quality study, but taken after 3 years of ownership. So we survey customers, you know, when they've had the vehicle for 3 years and ask them about all the problems they've experienced over that time. And then we have a couple of studies that look at the dealership experience. One that looks at the treatment that customers get when they go to buy the vehicle and which, you know, dealers treat the customers well, which ones don't treat them so well. And then our CSI study, which looks at the service experience. So when you take the vehicle back to the dealership, you know, for routine maintenance or a recall or to get something repaired, how is that process? How well do they do the work? How well do they treat you? Was the whole process efficient? And so forth. So we're really trying to look at the whole range of experiences a customer's going to have through their ownership of the vehicle.
Right. And you have made some changes to the initial quality study this year and kind of in reaction, or not kind of, definitely in reaction to what's going on in the industry. Talk a bit about those, would you?
Right. So we've been doing the study for 34 years. And obviously we need to update it periodically to keep abreast of everything that's going on in the industry. So the last redesign was in 2013. And we kept it the same since then, so automakers can see how their performance trends over time. But it comes to a point where we need to redesign because automakers have brought so much new technology to the market in the last few years that we need to capture how customers feel about those technologies. So, yes, this year we made some pretty dramatic changes to the survey and added a lot of questions around these new technologies. So, you know, if we think back to 2013, there was no Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. There were no real apps that folks would use to control their vehicle. There was no touch-free tailgate release, or at least very few. And a whole array of technologies. There were far fewer driver assistance features. So a whole array of new technologies have come to market in the last few years. And frankly, consumers are struggling with some of these. And so we need to find out who's doing it well and who's doing it not so well.
Right. As somebody who reviews cars on a very regular basis, you know, I run into the same things. And the things I'm writing about now are far different from the things I wrote about 10 or 15 years ago, even 5 years ago. And often we'll lead with tech and, you know, things like powertrain and other things that used to be the staple of a car review are left to the end, or, you know, and covered in kind of a a very brief fashion compared to the stuff that consumers are interfacing with. And you know, for very real reasons, as you found in the study, these are areas that consumers have a tendency to struggle with too, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the simple fact is that in the first 90 days of ownership, there's not that much that actually goes wrong with a vehicle in terms of things breaking. You know, people aren't breaking down on the side of the road in the first 90 days of ownership. And the vehicles are extremely well manufactured, extremely well put together. So most of the problems that customers are having is not that the vehicle is breaking, it's that it is, in some cases, infuriatingly difficult to do what they want the vehicle to do. I mean, the customers pay a lot of money for some of these technologies, and they expect it to be seamless. These days, customers compare the technology in their vehicle with technology in other parts of their life, particularly their phone, or, you know, if they have Alexa at home. You know, these things seem to work all the time, and they expect the vehicle to do so also, especially, you know, if they spent $30,000-$40,000 on it. And so, yeah, the vast majority of complaints that we're getting from consumers is that the vehicle is not working the way the customer wants it to work, not so much that it's broken.
Which is a change, right? I mean, when the study started, you know, so many years ago, things were breaking, and there were people being stranded by the sides of the road. And actually, J.D. Mm-hmm. Power did a lot to change all that, you know, manufacturers right. responding to, you know, what your company discovered made a big difference in vehicle quality overall. So it's a change.
It sure is. It's funny. I was thinking the other day about the first generation of the study. We had a whole category called water leaks. That was a category. It wasn't a question. It was a category of questions. And yeah. And it was a pretty big one. And, you know, these days, vehicles, you know, with a few exceptions, just simply don't leak. So, yeah, it's a very, very small problem for most people.
Right.
But, you know, replaced with a whole lot of other problems. Engine and transmission used to be by far and away the most problematic area on a vehicle, maybe 25 years ago. And now it's, you know, well down. I mean, people have more problems with their infotainment system than they do with the whole engine and transmission these days.
Right, right. We're talking with Dave Sargent of J.D. Power about the initial quality study for, is this 2021 or is this 2020 for 2020 vehicles?
This is 2020 vehicles, right. Yeah.
Let's dive into the results of the study. Some pretty fascinating winners, I think, and maybe losers, or you certainly don't call mm-hmm. them losers, but people that were well down the scale. But let's start out with the top of the charts, because it was a revelation, I think.
So, yeah, there were two brands tied for first overall. One was not a surprise, which was Kia. They have been at the top for many years now, in fact, for 6 years in succession. They have been the top mass market brand, either by themselves or tied with another brand. So a really amazing run by Kia. And I think the one that caught people by surprise was Dodge, who are tied with Kia for number one. Dodge was eighth last year out of 31. So they were, you know, starting to do well. And they have, and frankly, all of the FCA brands are showing significant improvement, and we saw good improvement by Ram and Jeep also. But Dodge has done an extremely good job of refining their vehicles. You know, some of their vehicles have been on the market for quite a few years now, and they have done a really good job of you know, dealing with any quality issues they had, and have just gotten very good at building those vehicles. The level of technology on the vehicles is maybe not quite as high as on some others, but it's appropriate for what consumers want. I mean, consumers want technology, but they want it to be simple and to work all the time. And FCA and frankly, all of the domestics have done a very good job of delivering on that. So yeah, for me, Dodge wasn't a huge surprise, but I think in the wider world, it's actually the first time in 34 years that a domestic brand has sat on top of the list, which is, you know, very impressive. And actually, we see three domestics in the top four. So with Chevy and Ram also putting in their best ever performance in the study, Mitsubishi, Jeep, And Volkswagen, also three other brands who had their best year ever in the study. So yeah, there's a lot of good news to go around.
Yeah. Well, and it strikes me a lot of counterintuitive news too, right, Dave? I mean, or maybe I'm behind the times in terms of product quality, but you know, those aren't brands that we had associated with stellar product quality or even IQS product quality over 90 days or things not gone wrong over 90 days of ownership, and pretty vast turnaround, I think, for a lot of brands there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, even, you know, people in the industry, a lot of people's perceptions of quality are often based on history, of course, because that's what you have to go on. And, you know, some of these brands over history have not performed so well in any quality study. You know, but things have changed. The performance of the brands has changed, and the definition of quality has changed. It's now much broader than it used to be. I mean, it used to be, like I said, you know, does the vehicle break down or not? And do things stop working? That used to be the definition of quality. Well, that's not good enough anymore. Consumers expect much, much more than that. And when we talk to consumers about quality, they're talking about the quality of the experience as much as just the fundamental, you know, manufacturing quality of the vehicle. So they expect Apple CarPlay to work every time. They expect the navigation system to be simple to operate. They expect their app to connect with their phone. That's how consumers define quality these days, in addition to, you know, the engine and transmission working properly.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about Tesla. Tesla's not officially included in the study, but you did a great deal of research on Tesla and found some interesting things. Tell us about it, would you?
Yeah, so Tesla is not officially included in the study because there are 15 states in the country where we need the permission of the automaker to survey their customers. California is one of those states where obviously Tesla sells a large proportion of their vehicles, probably about a third of all of the vehicles are sold in California. Every automaker does give us permission in those 15 states except for Tesla. So far, they've chosen not to. But what we did do this year was we surveyed their customers in the other 35 states. And from that, we can get a pretty good projection as to what their national score would be, because we know the systemic differences between those 35 states and the national average. And so we can make a slight adjustment to their score and project their national score, which is what we did this year.
And what did you find?
Actually, we found that Tesla customers reported more problems than any other brand in the industry, 250 problems per 100. So although they're not officially ranked, they did report more problems than any other brand of automaker. And we had over 1,200 Tesla customers responding to the study. So this is a very robust sample. We will do the same for some of the studies that will come out in the next couple of months. So, you know, I mentioned our appeal study, which is all around the customer's love affair with their vehicle. You know, and their Tesla may well perform very differently. So, you know, a bad initial quality score does not necessarily mean that people don't like their vehicle.
Right. I mean, it was tough times. I think the 2020 study was tough times for most luxury manufacturers, most premium manufacturers. And I think part of it, you tell me, but I think a lot of it has to do with the complication of some of the systems that they put in front of consumers these days. Talk a bit about that, would you?
It does, yeah. So, you know, as we discussed, technology, whether that be on the infotainment system, in the driver assistance systems, with the app, with some of the other features, that is a really big part of the quality experience these days. Customers, for the most part, want this technology. They're prepared to pay for it. They like showing it off and they like using it, but it does come with some complications in some cases. The premium manufacturers generally have more complex technology because of a perception that their customers want more features and functionality, which is probably true. But with that comes some complexity, and a lot of customers, it's the first time they've ever experienced some of these technologies, and there's a learning curve. And some customers are saying, yeah, this technology would be great if it worked, but it just doesn't work, or it doesn't work in the way that I want it to, or the menu structure is too complicated. You know, all I want to do is very simple function, but I need to go four deep in the menu to be able to do it, because there's so much other functionality I have to go searching for the one simple thing that I need to do, and customers don't want to do that.
Right. Do you think it's a matter of learning curve, Dave, or is some of it that there's just so much complexity it could never be used as you're driving a vehicle? Because as a guy who road tests cars a lot, that's kind of the impression I get with some of this stuff is, no matter if I know how to do this, I will never do this because it's just the benefit of doing it isn't worth the cost and attention that I have to pay to get it done.
Yeah, some of it is learning curve, but a lot of it, as you say, it's really not. The customer could own the vehicle for 3 years and they will still be reporting the same kinds of problems, either because the technology is too complicated or it just simply doesn't function consistently. Voice recognition is a good example. Consumers believe that they're always talking to their voice recognition system the same way and it reacts differently. The touch-free tailgate sensor is another, where customers believe that they're waving their foot in the same way they did yesterday, and yesterday opened fine, and today it's not opening fine. So yeah, that's not really around a learning curve. That's around the fundamental design of the technology is not robust enough for what consumers want. And it may work perfectly in a lab under controlled conditions, but consumers aren't driving the vehicles in a lab. You know, they have other things going on. They've got kids, they've got dogs, they've got shopping, they've got all sorts of distractions, and they want to be able to, you know, use this technology without thinking about it. And some of it is just too complicated for them to do that.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that struck me, we don't cover the plant awards very much to the consumer, and maybe the consumer doesn't really care, but the Platinum Award winner was real interesting to me. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the plant awards are based just on the defects and malfunctions on the vehicle. It's not really around the technology. So we try to measure things that a plant can control. And yes, we have over 100 plants ranked in the study, and the best plant overall was a GM plant that builds the Buick Envision. But the interesting thing is it's located in China. And the vehicles are imported into the U.S. This plant did very well last year. It was second out of all the plants in Asia Pacific, which includes China and Japan and Korea. So it performed well last year, and then this year it raised itself up to the top of the rankings. So yeah, our Platinum Award winner is actually a plant based in China. And when we look at other regions, the top plant in the Americas is in Mexico, and the top plant in the European and African region is in Turkey. So we have some, unexpected locations, you might say, for some of our winners. And really what it shows is a couple of things. One is just the global nature of the automotive industry, that people are building vehicles all over the place and shipping them all over the place. And secondly, quality doesn't really care much about geography. It's much more around who runs the plant, the processes that are put in place, the training that the workforce get, the choice of the right suppliers, and it really, where the plant is located is actually, one of the less important factors around what drives quality these days.
Yeah, and even who the workforce
right,
is.
Right, exactly right.
The consistency of the workforce. Very interesting. How would, we're coming to the end of the interview, Dave, how should the consumer look at IQS? How should they use that to guide their purchase?
Right. Well, for the consumer to get more information, they can go to jdpower.com and see all the results on our website. But in terms of how they should use it, it should be one of a number of things that consumers think about when they're in the market for a new vehicle. So, there are other good sources, the media, road tests. There are other organizations who do quality metrics. The consumer clearly should test drive the vehicle themselves and should do a lot of research around the specific vehicle that they want to buy. So IQS is really important. You know, we think it's one of the most important measures that a consumer can look at, but it's only one of a number. And, you know, we ourselves have other metrics that consumers should look at. And I think it's really important for consumers to do their research on the latest model year because, again, you know, a lot of consumer perceptions are based on, you know, history and, you know, maybe what the quality was 10 or 20 years ago of the different vehicles. Well, today is very, very different. And, you know, there's some surprising brands at the top and some surprising brands at the bottom. And the other thing is a consumer should look at the specific vehicle that they're interested in, not just at the brand rankings, because within each brand, there's often a wide variety of performance. Any one brand will have some, you know, really good products and some less good products. And so don't just look at the brand ranking, actually go look at the actual model detail.
Right. And that's all available at jdpower.com. And Dave Sargent of JD Power, thanks so much for being with us. I really do appreciate it. So great to speak with you again.
You too, Jack. Always a pleasure.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Dave Sargent of JD Power, talking about the initial quality study for 2020. Fascinating stuff. And we thank him so much for being with us. And I also have to thank Chris Teague. Chris, thanks so much for being with us again and co-hosting and doing such a great job at that. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you. You're making me blush. I appreciate the opportunity. And I will remind everyone, if you like what you heard today and you want to show us some support, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, all the other places, and leave us a review. It really helps us kind of bump up the charts a little bit and helps us out.
Yeah, and we would appreciate that. We appreciate you listening. And again, I appreciate Chris Teague being with us. And join us again next time right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack Nierad.